Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On Track 1, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On Track 2, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track 3 features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 11, Number 2. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was sports attrition, the downside of what's up. Attrition means a reduction in size or strength. It's what happens when any external force wears something down by friction or abrasion. It's the constant wearing down of something, like the constant wearing down of our lean functional mass when it's exposed to the stress of competitive sport. Professional sport is incredibly stressful, and stress, for the most part, is highly catabolic. But most forms of physical activity, whether professional or recreational, at the end of the day, do not increase growth hormone release or testosterone, so they're all catabolic as well. Perhaps there might be some anabolic effect of the activity, but when combined with the effects of oxygen consumption and cortisol release, especially when sustained for 1 to 2 hours, along with the continued adrenaline release associated with the movement, the net effect overall is depletion, not accretion. It's loss, not gain. In essence, sport uses muscle, but it doesn't build muscle, as in added muscle fiber thickness or and an increase in functional mass. To do that, we need to train specifically for that, and that, of course, brings us to the concept of progressive resistance training, also known as pumping iron. So pump iron to create an anabolic flux to push out against the catabolic forces that we create through our own behavior and that life also throws at us. On this edition of Clinical Review, I'll continue with the next PSN principle in the series, which is PSN, Principles of Sports Nutrition, number 12, muscle. Muscle is my health engine. I love how it looks and I love how it feels. I love the sensation of muscular power and strength, and I especially like what muscle gives me, confidence and personal pride. Muscle allows all of us to perform a great range of recreation and physical activity. Without muscle, none of us could move. Muscle serves the body in many ways, including the generation of heat, also known as thermogenesis, the utilization of stored body fat and glycogen as fuel, stability of body position and posture, regulation of organ function, the elimination of waste through peristalsis, the circulation of blood, and the endogenous or internal production of amino acids, namely glutamine, required for immune cell replication. The human body is comprised of three types of muscle tissue that function in different ways, namely skeletal, cardiac, and smooth. Skeletal muscle constitutes the majority of the body's total muscle pool, about 50%, and is the one that typically gets the most attention. 640 individual skeletal muscles are attached by tendons to 206 bones. Skeletal and cardiac muscle is also called striated muscle because of the presence of alternating dark and light bands. Let's talk about muscle composition. Muscle is predominantly water, as in 72% water, 22% protein, and 4% fat. What remains is 2% inorganic material. Fat is 15% water, 12% protein, 70% fat, and 3% inorganic material. The structure and function of muscle and fat are not the same. They operate and act independent of each other. A muscle cell is called a myocyte. A fat cell is called an adipocyte. There are two different types of cells. One cannot turn into the other. You can certainly gain or lose both, but a fat cell cannot transform into a muscle cell, and muscle absolutely does not turn into fat. Ever heard anyone say, that guy turned to fat? You know, he was an athlete and all his muscle turned to fat. That just simply ain't true. He lost his muscle through inactivity. If you don't use it, you lose it. And he gained fat like anyone else can. And so it looks like his muscles turned to fat, but not possible. Skeletal muscle is also defined based on characteristics of function. These include excitability, contractility, extensibility, and elasticity. Excitability describes how a muscle can receive and respond to stimulus from the nervous system. Contractility refers to the fiber's ability to contract or shorten, such as when you make a muscle by squeezing your biceps. Extensibility is defined by muscle stretch and its ability to extend through a range of motion. Elasticity relates to muscle recoil and how efficiently muscle can return to its original shape after contraction or extension. Individual muscle fibers are separated, surrounded, and protected by bands and layers of connective tissue. A special sheath called fascia surrounds each fiber, and deep fascia connective tissue holds muscle together and separates them into functional groups and bundles. A muscle fiber is actually a single muscle cell comprised of an outer membrane called the sarcolemma. Think of a major muscle group like your chest or back. Large muscles like these consist of hundreds of independent muscle fibers called fasciculi, which are nicely bundled and wrapped up like a newborn baby in a blanket. Each fiber is internally packed with additional bundles of finer myofibrils. Myofibrils are the contractile elements of skeletal muscle. Electron micrographs of myofibrils reveal even finer, like column-like structures called myofilaments. Myofilaments consist of thousands of functional units strung together in long chains. Each unit is highly functional and is arranged in compartments called sarcomeres. There are two types of myofilaments, thick and thin. Thick myofilaments consist mainly of the protein myosin. Thin myofilaments consist mainly of the protein actin. Special bands, zones, and lines, identified by letters like A, I, H, Z, and M, describe regions specific to the myofilaments myosin and actin, where they overlap, and how they interact and interconnect at different points. Nerve cells that stimulate muscle fibers are called motor neurons, and a single motor neuron, including all the muscle fibers it stimulates, is called a motor unit. The process of muscle contraction involves the recruitment of at least one or more motor units. The ability to recruit motor units depends on the health and condition of our neuromuscular system and is a primary determinant of muscle contraction, muscle force, and complete muscular development. Let's talk about the sliding filament theory. The mechanism of muscle contraction is based on a sliding filament theory model originally proposed by Hansen and Huxley in 1954. According to this model, muscle contraction occurs as thin filaments slide or pass over thick ones. The filaments themselves do not shorten in length, but simply slide past one another, causing whole muscle bundles to shorten, change shape, and become thicker. Roll up one of your shirt sleeves. Extend your bare arm straight out in front of you. Bend your elbow and bring your fist towards your face. Now contract your bicep with force. Notice how your bicep gets thicker and larger. As the filaments slide past each other, it causes the muscle to change shape and rise up into a ball. Myosin cross bridges attach to and pull on actin filaments, causing them to slide inward. As the filaments slide and sarcomeres shorten, the entire muscle eventually shortens or contracts, and it all happens because we willed it to. All or nothing. Skeletal muscle fibers contract according to an all or nothing principle initiated by thought. Our brain, if we use it, is what makes us human and special and unique. An electrical impulse strong enough to elicit a contraction response produces maximal contraction of an entire motor unit or none at all. All or nothing, folks. This principle relates beautifully to human achievement. Throw yourself into whatever you're doing and don't hold back. Dive in. Go for it. Don't look back. Make the decision to do it or not. All or nothing. If you put yourself and everything you are into any project, big or small, including your full potential, you can do anything. We are limited by ourselves. Did you know that desire itself is the only evidence you need to achieve your goal? Believe and achieve. Enter the science of epigenetics. If we want to be well, we have to know what wellness is. Next, we must understand how to achieve wellness. And finally, we have to apply the work that leads to wellness as an outcome. It's all about action. You can't build health or muscle without action and effort. The concept of all or nothing is inherent in the discipline of sport and elite exercise training. You have to know what you want and go after it, like a hungry animal. The entire mechanism is driven by your own desire, energy, and effort, and you get back whatever you put in. Call it karma, give and take, divine recycling, reaping and sowing, or cause and effect. I call it CHI, courage, honor, and integrity. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Stephen R. Covey, author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Opposition is a natural part of life. Just as we develop our physical muscles through overcoming opposition, such as lifting weights, we develop our character muscles by overcoming challenges and adversity.